Hi.
Siri. Welcome to High Theory.
In this podcast, we get high on the substance of theory. I'm Kim Adams.
And I'm Sharunik Bosu.
We are two tired academics trying to save critique from itself.
Hello and welcome to today's episode, which is titled Computational Creativity. And our guest today will tell us whether or not we should be scared about AI. Actually, I'm kidding. Anyway, our guest today is Tuhin Chakraborty, and I'm going to ask Tuhin to introduce himself.
I am Tuhin, and I'm a PhD student at Columbia University in the Department of Computer Science. As Sharunik described, my research is primarily focused on artificial intelligence, and artificial intelligence is like an umbrella term which kind of encapsulates a lot of different sources. It can deal with images, it can deal with text, it can deal with other sources of media such as audio or video. My research interests are particularly on artificial intelligence concerning text. In computer science, it's also called natural language processing, which is again a field at the intersection of linguistics and statistics and mathematics. I recently got introduced to this really interdisciplinary and cool field of computational creativity. And we definitely...
Sorry, I have to ask you about that. So, Tuhin, what the heck is computational creativity?
I mean, computational creativity is this like really cool multidisciplinary endeavor that's located at the intersection of multiple fields, such as like artificial intelligence, cognitive sciences, psychology, philosophy, and the arts. It basically concerns with both theoretical and practical issues in the study of creativity. Some of the theoretical work on like the nature and the proper definition of creativity is performed here, as well as we also want to implement systems that exhibit creativity. To give you an example, like computational system, which is writing a story, or a computational system, which is writing a poetry, or maybe like an image where you have an image of a particular style and then you want to transform it to a different style. Or maybe just kind of create some music which is inspired from some music from say Mozart. So like, yeah, it's basically a field where you are infusing creativity from different elements, but then a human is not doing that. A AI model or a computer science model is basically doing the same thing.
You have an image in a particular style, then you transfer that style to something else. And I'm guessing that this is, you know, more complicated than, say, Facebook filters, which transform your face into a Van Gogh painting.
Yeah, sure. I mean, you can actually think of that also as computational creativity, because like, I guess now it's like a common filter. Everyone is kind of aware of it. Or say, supposedly, if you're using Snapchat or Instagram, like these days, there are so many filters, right, where you can see that your face is kind of suddenly becoming that of a lion, or like it kind of is resembling something like a, maybe like a monster, or different type of like superimposing with image. So like, this is something which is a certain style of creativity, right? Like ideally a human would be very well equipped to do something like that. But now we are just kind of moving a step ahead from it. And we are saying that we can train models who can automatically do this. All we need to do is input image source and then like a target which we want it to transform. And then all it's going to do is it's going to automatically transform it.
I guess you've already started answering my next question, which is, how do we use computational creativity?
Yeah, this is a big question. And there is a lot of debate about computational creativity, the ethical implications of it, where it leads to future creative practitioners if machine learning or AI models are going to take this over. But when I started doing research in computational creativity, I always thought of this as a boon in disguise, because I feel as humans, creativity kind of flows. Like sometimes you're very creative, but then sometimes you're not at all creative. But for a computer or an AI system, that sort of pattern never happens. If you have already trained your model on pre-existing data, then if you require it to produce a certain sort of creative output, it's always going to do this for you. So to give you like a very easy example, like let's say you are trying to write poetry, okay? And then you wrote like four sentences and you're kind of bogged down and confused on like how the next sentence should be. Like you want it to be thoughtful, you want it to be coherent, you want it to be based on the context. So let's say you are running out of ideas and you're just like sitting and pondering like what could it be? Let's say now you have a computational creative model which is trained to suggest you like verses or next sentences. So what you can then just do is like input a couple of contexts from your written poetry, and then what it is going to do is it's going to like suggest you a couple of next sentences. And then what you can do is use your own discretion to probably edit it or just like take it as it is and use it in your poetry. And this kind of like helps you kind of just go with the process. This is one example. Let's say if I want to give you another example, like if you think in like writing an essay or like a persuasive essay where it has been shown that the use of metaphors make your essay really strong or persuasive. So they wrote a literal sentence and then you want to transform the sentence to kind of evoke or portray a certain metaphor. Now, as we know that like coming up with good metaphors is itself a very challenging task, even for humans. So if you have a very good AI system, which is kind of good at predicting or kind of transforming these literal sentences into metaphorical paraphrases, then this can be of like a lot of help and use even for like the education sector. So yeah, I kind of think that like computational creativity to be like this collaborative field, which kind of uses AI to help creative practitioners.
So on the one hand, any system which is equipped with computational creativity can be seen as say one step further from a dictionary or a thesaurus. And so when you're writing something and you, as you said, you're writing a persuasive essay and you have written down a word and you do check the thesaurus to sort of have a more fancy sounding word because you are writing this for an audience which requires that kind of writing. So you're saying that any system equipped with this in any form can be one step ahead of this. And since you're thinking of the application of this in education, so that kind of characterization works really well. But on the other hand, and I was really struck by what you said about the process of writing poetry. In terms of these systems being used to sort of get over writer's block, one would argue that, you know, that kind of frustration and that kind of labor is what entails the human creative process. So sort of how do people who are working in your field, you know, think about those kind of frustrations as productive labor?
I kind of resonate with what you're trying to say here. I guess one of the ways I kind of look at it is, so basically, let's say you have a writer's block and like you are spending days just thinking about it, or you're just not finding a cue or not finding a narrative. And this is like affecting your like mental health or your productivity, right? So instead, what you can do is you can seek help from this trained system. And I'm not saying that this is sort of a plagiarism where you're basically trying to copy what the AI model is saying. All you can do is like, you can even take some sort of inspiration from it. Like, let's say it's predicted text, right? And then what you can do from there is like, you can change it in your own way. You can add your own flavor, but then at least what is helpful here is because these models are trained on gigantic and enormous amount of data, they are very good at like predictive text. So they can generate like your next sentences, like two sentences from your previous context. Like they can even generate a whole book. So of course, I mean, this is not something which would be like as close to like a human performance, but then this is still a step forward in kind of assisting creative writing practitioners or anyone else. Like, even if you think of like computational creativity in music, like let's say the same sort of problems which a writer faces, sometimes a musician faces as well, right? Like they are not being able to find a nice melodious tune to their song. And then like they go to like this model, which is like kind of trained to generate new music. So they can just hear something and kind of borrow that into their work and then like kind of nicely infuse it to form something. So I kind of look at it in a positive way where I feel it is kind of keeping in consideration the productivity angle, but it's also kind of making sure that you are not spending like a lot of time just being frustrated about it or thinking about it, you can just like take help from these systems and further improve your productivity.
You mentioned predictive text, and when we decided to do this episode, I know I asked you that we cannot get very technical, but at the same time, I think that people generally have heard about GPT-3 and people have been in talking about GPT-3 for a while now. And I kind of know what it is, but I also don't know what it is. So can you just explain in 3 seconds?
It's generative pre-trained transformer. Let's say this is artificial neural network, which is a AI model. And the beautiful benefit of GPT-3 is it is a model which is trained on almost the whole of internet. And through this large-scale training, what this model becomes is this model becomes very good at predicting text. So if you say like, I am staying in New York City and I take it's going to probably easily say the subway, because like it knows that you are talking about living in New York City and subway is something which is there in New York City and take the, so probably this is something which is very common in usual discourse. Or let's say any general sentence, if you say that I bought 2 gallons of, then like the probability of it predicting this as milk or water would be a lot more higher than maybe something like petrol. So I think like it is very good at predicting next words. And what is even more better for GPT-3 is it is not only restrictive to words, it can generate sentences, phrases, paragraphs, even like big documents.
On the note of specific applications of GPT-3 and also on the larger note of future applications of AI, and especially, as you know, there's been a lot of debate about this, especially surrounding the presidential campaign of Andrew Yang, who really was the first person, at least in the American political scene, who has talked about automation as part of their campaign. So it's something that is in all our minds right now. And I want you to use that as a sort of platform to answer my next question, which is, how will computational creativity save the world?
I guess computational creativity is not trying to save the world in a traditional sense, but what it can do is like it can help us in multiple ways. We all use this acronym TLDR, right? Like too long, don't read. So like, let's say there's this like really 2-page political speech or like 2-page campaign, which you probably don't have the time to read. But there are currently like computationally creative models which are very good in terms of like summarizing the content. So like what it can do is like you're feeding it a 2-page content and it's kind of like summarizing and telling you it in 2 to 3 sentences. So this kind of is saving a lot of your time and then also kind of like improving your productivity so that you can use the same amount of time for other tasks. Yeah, I mean, if you particularly ask about like how computational creative models can help in the political space, I feel that's definitely something. And also like the earlier example, which I talked about, right? Like metaphors, like you know that politicians constantly use very powerful metaphors because like metaphors are like a tool which kind of like drives audiences, like kind of influences the mass. And while we have to be careful about using powerful metaphors, because like metaphors can also like sway you in a bad way, but then it kind of like makes your text a lot more convincing and persuasive, right? So if someone is writing something in a haste and then they want to just kind of like edit this text using computational creativity tools, this kind of like helps and makes their writing a lot more stronger. So I'm sure like we are aware of tools like Grammarly, right? Which kind of creates a very good environment by correcting your grammatical errors or punctuation.
So I'm not, you know, I completely understand like at the granular level that this is something that is, it really expresses how far we have come, and this is how it works is really a thing of wonder. So I'm talking about in a much larger sense, which is very, very simply put, you know, 2 questions. One is, or I know that, you know, you are not charged with solving these problems, but I'm just wondering what you think of them or what people in your field are thinking of these issues. One, of course, is, you know, job losses from automation. And the other, you know, given how realistically or how realistic, quote unquote, realistic texts being produced by systems like these, you know, what are your thoughts on them being used for generating fake news, for example?
These are like very good questions. And of course, like with one of the very important facets for AI is responsible and safe AI, right? I mean, we all know, and like this is here, we are talking about computational creativity, but then like, I guess we're all aware of all the evils of like facial recognition systems, which is also like AI based, right? There are biases in the data. And when these large models are trained on like internet data, and we know that like internet data contains a lot of toxic language, they can like be, they can be harsh towards marginalized communities, they can produce racist and sexist texts. So that's definitely one of the considerations. And especially for this giant pre-trained language models, there is a lot of research which is also going on in the community about like how we can make sure or how we can use sophisticated techniques so that these models are not producing any sort of biased or fake news. And when you say that that sort of predictive text generation by an AI model is harmful to the society, and when you come about like fake news, yeah, that's definitely one of the bigger concerns. And yeah, I mean, there is also a lot of like work which is going on in the current community in terms of like faithfulness of like natural language generation systems, like how much they can actually produce faithful and coherent output. But the thing to add here is it's also really difficult and challenging at this point of time to have really like authentic 100% true news. So what I think of computational creativity is like a nice human in the loop kind of thing, where say you are asking a language model like GPT-3 to generate some text for you, but then you have to think of this as a genre. Like if this is like a creative genre, say like a story writing or a poetry, you probably wouldn't care that much, right? But then let's say you're writing a New York Times journalistic piece using a language model, then you definitely need proof checking or fact checking by a person who can then just go through the text. And then if there is something incorrect, then just kind of change it. So I still feel that we are not at this level, or I don't even think we will ever be at that level where we are going to give that sort of autonomy to AI systems. What it is going to do is it is going to make the jobs of existing professionals a lot more easier. Like, I mean, a journalist not only has to fact check, they also have to like write coherent sentences, like come up with like a whole text. It's a lot of task, right? So here, if you are using a language model to generate a lot of text for you, then like what the next step is for the journalist is probably to go through it and see if there are grammatical mistakes or there are errors or there are like factually inconsistent outputs, which they can then edit, which should still be a lot more easier and less time consuming than that, than just writing something from the scratch. So I do feel that it wouldn't be like a time where these language models or these AI systems would just kind of replace jobs. But I do think of a time when people would be a lot more eager and a lot more accepting of the fact that these systems are your companions and all they're going to do is they're going to help. Even currently in Google, right, in Gmail, like you have auto predictive text in your emails, right? Like, so this is a classic example of language model being used for a productive purpose. Am I saying that then I will just let an AI model type my email for me? I am not saying that. I will never trust AI models at this point of time to do such kind of a thing. But then I can definitely think of my AI model as my friend who's going to like help me or assist me in these tasks.
All right. Thank you so much for coming to our show and telling us all about computational creativity, Tohin. Thank you.
And thank you for listening to High Theory.
If you like our podcast, please review and subscribe on Spotify, iTunes, Patreon, or wherever you get your podcast fix.
Sharonic Bosu manages our social media presence. Owen Quinn composes our theme music, and Kim Adams and Sharonic Bosu edit our audio.
You can also find us at hightheory.net.
We hope you have a highly theoretical day.